The hosts feel it would be a little unkind to present this podcast without just a word of friendly warning. We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein, a man of science who sought to create a man after his own image without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to. Well, we've warned you.
Hello, and welcome once again to the Frankencast. I'm the mad scientist, Anthony Bowman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined as always by...
the guy who spoils the movie at the beginning of the movie, that is Eric Velasquez. My pronouns are also he, him. That's what our friend Joe's going to do. He's going to spoil everything for everybody.
Right. Yeah. It's like this movie is, it's really, really strange. I know it's based on a short story.
Yeah,
it's
based on a book.
Yeah, a book. Yeah, like it kind of makes me want to read that because like, you know, it's a Roger.
Dude. Yeah. I want to know what they left out because there's a bunch. I can tell right by the way this is written.
Yeah.
There's so much out.
Yeah, it's a Roger Corman thing, so I'm sure mm-hmm. it was like, you know, made quick and dirty and, you know, I'm mm-hmm. sure. Although it does
we got
have...
7 days to do this and we got $50,000. Let's go.
Yeah. This does have a little bit more production value than I'm used to seeing out of a Corman movie. But still, yeah, like I'm sure that they weren't able to cover everything in the book. We may have to get our hands on that at some point and talk yeah. about it.
Well, this is a post-Cameron Corman, too, though. So, Cameron's already left him, so he's probably like, I got to show that little SOB up a little bit.
Yeah.
I got to use some of my money.
Yeah. And it's, you know, he's kind of, you know, pretty well known for, like, starting out celebrities' careers. But like,
or finishing them off.
Yeah, but John Hurt's kind of in the middle. Like John Hurt, I think, was already well known before this, and definitely well known after this.
What about Raul Julia? Because I feel like, I mean, this is what 94, so Adam's Family has already happened.
Yeah.
So I guess yeah, this is kind of his middle for him too. And funnily enough, both of these actors are the best parts of the movie. So
yes. Yeah, they're definitely, they know what they're doing, and they mm-hmm. like, they bounce off of each other really well, too. Like, they both have so much charisma, it's fun seeing them on screen together.
Have you ever heard that, the like, meme going around about actors who were way too good for the movie they were in?
Mm.
We've got two right here.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to run down the list of all the famous people that are going to be in this? I mean, John Hurt, like you mentioned, Raul Julia. There's also Nick Brimble. I don't know if I would call him a big name ever, but he's the monster.
Okay.
Then we've got Bridget Fonda, who, like, I feel like a little bit after this, she would be famous up until, like, the mid-2000s and then drop off. And then Jason Patrick, this was definitely the end of... this is after the Michael! You know, the fucking Lost Boys, where they say his name 30 times. Yeah. 30,000 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a lot of our people. That's our main cast. And by the way, Jason Patrick is Lord Byron. So wait a second. We have... and Bridget Fonda is Mary Shelley. So we've got some Frankenstein in our historiodrama.
Oh, and I did not make this connection. Did you see who was playing Percy Shelley? I did not realize who that was. It's Michael Hutchins, the singer from the band NXS. I did not realize that he had done any acting, so I would not have. I just didn't make the connection that was
That's
him.
Amazing. You know, I feel like Percy Shelley would approve, right?
Yeah, that's definitely the right guy to play Percy Shelley, for sure.
Like, that's life imitating art, imitating life again. It's beautiful. Very poetic. All right, so this is going to kick off, and wait a second. We've got a guy in, like, early 1800s garb talking about Einstein and how if mm-hmm. Einstein knew what he did, he would be a watchmaker. What's up with that?
Yeah, it feels very anachronistic, and, you know, I mean, you know you're watching a Frankenstein movie. This looks like he's crossing, like, an Arctic tundra. It seems mm-hmm. like this is Victor
this
at
is
the end,
end
of
right?
the, you know, yeah, the end of the story.
Yeah, we're going to see a boat with Walton in it. It'll be great.
Right, yeah. But then he's like, well, you probably wonder how I got here, basically. So,
right, yeah. This could be the end of the world or just the beginning of a new one.
Yeah. So then we flash back to this same guy, John Hurt. His Joe Buchanan is the character's name.
Right, and he's in a futuristic science / BDSM outfit.
Right, at a science-y mm-hmm. lab. Mm-hmm. And they are...
Listen, that's more of an art institute, okay? I've seen that place. Like, yeah. With all the flashing lights, come on. And the Statue of Liberty in the middle.
Yeah, they have this, like, miniature Statue of Liberty that they then shoot with a plasma beam.
Oh, by the way, we find out we're in New Los Angeles in 2031. So in 7 years, this is going to be a reality.
Right. And so they shoot the statue, and it immediately just vanishes.
Right.
And we learn now that this is a weapons testing facility, and that Joe and his crew have created this plasma beam that will completely, like, vaporize an enemy. It basically erases them from existence.
Yeah, if you're a Warhammer 40K fan, this is a Necron device. A Necron gun.
Okay.
Yep. We'll talk about that later. I'll explain the joke.
And so he's like, this is a demo. They're, like, showing it off, and there's, like, a woman there who's, like, I don't know if we even get her name, but she's, like, part of his team, and she's just, like, you know, the president is tired of having to, like, keep this on the hush-hush. Like,
well, he's causing cracks in space and time, and people are just falling through.
Right, yeah. People keep, like, vanishing. There's atmospheric disturbances, and time slips.
Right. Like, hold on. How big are these time slips? Like, are they happening to multiple people?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Time slip, to me, sounds like suddenly, like, that. Yeah, time has jumped for everyone. Like, suddenly, right. You know, you're at school Tuesday, and then suddenly it's, like, Thursday night, and you're at home, and you're like, wait, what? What happened?
Right.
And, if that's happening to, like, everyone, like, what the, like, that this, they should have halted these tests immediately.
Right.
But he's, you know, of course, Joe's like, you know, it's a side effect, you know. We'll figure it out. It's not the end of the world, he says.
Right. I wonder what his analogy or how analogous he is to Frankenstein, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be
yeah.
very, very much so.
Exactly. And, you know, he kind of keeps sort of defending the project to her. But then as soon as she leaves, he starts talking to his
immediately.
Crew.
He's like, I fucked up.
Yeah, this is bad. he was like, yeah, this project seems like it's a failure. You know, I wanted to make a weapon that wouldn't destroy the world. It sounds like the idea is I'm trying to make a better alternative to nuclear war. You know,
right.
Like, we can just kill the enemy without destroying everything else, but I've actually made something even worse.
Well, yeah, he's literally created a crack in the sky.
Yeah.
That leads to who knows where, right?
Right, yeah. And so he you know, kind of, like, lets the rest of his crew down that, like, things aren't looking well, and then he decides to head home. He gets in his very futuristic car that talks.
Yeah, he just conjures it up.
Yeah.
All I know is, the way Tesla is right now, I would not fucking trust that thing.
Right. It looks kind of like the Cybertruck. It's like a mix of that and like a Lamborghini or something.
Dude, what if this is Elon Musk's inspiration? That's even worse, right?
Right, yeah.
Damn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the car is very, you know, it's talkative. It's, like, chatting with him as he drives home.
Gives him the news report, basically. They're like, yeah, everything's fucked up, and we pretty much know there's a weapons testing facility. We're kind of worried about that. Also, the last of the Brazilian rainforest is depleting, so we're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, we're probably right on track for all of that.
Right. Yeah. We won't have the talking car, but we will have the end of the rainforest. Yeah. That's
right. Well, maybe it'll be new for 2031.
Right. Yeah. But so when he gets home, he sees there's like a bunch of kids. I don't know, like, are these his kids or neighborhood kids? I don't, like,
who the fuck knows? But they're fucking occultists, bicycle occultists.
Yeah, it's like 7 or 8 kids, and they're standing around like a bicycle that we would recognize, a normal bicycle mm-hmm. from now, that they are burying, and they are giving it a funeral. And he's just like, oh, hey, kids, you're throwing a bike funeral. And they're like, yep. And he's like, why? And they're like, because we got a new bike. And they point to, right. like, this fancy, futuristic-looking bike.
Futuristic for 1994.
Right, yeah. So it definitely feels...
It just has a full wheel. That's right. No spokes. Yeah.
It seems like a pretty, like, heavy-handed metaphor of, like, we cannibalize the past for the future. And, you know, that's definitely sort of the... theme that we're gonna run into over and over again in this story, that like we're destroying things by making new things.
Yeah, and also adding weird religious elements to it.
Right. But then like he's about to head inside and leave them to it, but suddenly like a storm breaks out and it seems really bad really fast, so he's like trying to rush and hurry and help the kids get inside into safety.
Right, these idiot kids won't leave without their brand new bike.
Yeah. And then suddenly the crack in the sky opens up further, and like a,
we get a heavy metal album. As like, what is he, a Mongolian or what would they be?
Yeah, I couldn't tell. He's definitely, it's like he's like a horde
Asian
warrior
steps.
Yeah, yeah, something like that, you know. He's on a horse and like, you know, coming down out of the sky, and he like throws a spear, and it like is flying,
stops inches away.
Yeah, it's almost hits Joe, but then the hole in the sky pulls it back, and then it also pulls the guy on the horse back, and then it, just for good measure, goes ahead and grabs Joe and sucks him into the vortex
and
as well.
His car. Let's not forget Joe and the car.
Yeah.
The car is a very important character for whatever reason.
I think the reason is they spent money to make this dumb car, and so they had to get their money's worth out of it.
I wonder how important the car is in the story. Is it important at all? Right. Is there ever a car?
Probably not.
It's probably a lady, and she's like helping him out. She's like his assistant or something.
Yeah, I'd believe it.
Yeah. All right, but yeah, he gets sucked into time and space, and then he just pops out in some random countryside, very, very Sound of Music looking.
Yeah, just like rolling hills, very pastoral.
A few mountains off in the distance.
Yeah, and he
I don't think it looks like anywhere in America. So.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure where this is filmed.
Yeah, we need to look into that.
He starts talking to the car, and the car works, but you know, it's unable to connect to the mainframe or
the satellites.
Yeah, he's like,
by the way. Bullshit. Okay, so you know how the car says there's zero pollution in the air? Bullshit. Even back then, there was something.
Yeah.
Like maybe 5%.
Yeah, factories and stuff. That was already happening at that point. People were burning coal and everything.
Yeah, Dickensian kids were dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, again, it just feels like a thing where it's like we're making the past look like it's better, and that we're ruining things here in the future, which, you know, it's we're not doing great here in the future, but idealizing the past doesn't improve things. This is how you get Make America Great Again, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. It only makes it worse.
Right. But, yeah, so clearly he has traveled back in time, you know, that's the idea here. You know, there's no satellites in the sky, there's no pollution. It's before, you know, his time where humans have done all this damage to the world.
Right. Right. In the beginnings of the industrial age.
Right, yeah.
By the way, so, all right, so he just appears on this mountainside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to drive his car around without it being destroyed, because there's no roads at this point in history.
Yeah.
Like, no actual, like, drivable roads.
Yeah.
Sure, they're walkable carriage rides, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he just knows there's a barn that he can hide his car in.
Yeah, there's a lot of just, like, convenience, like, we just need to move the story along kind of stuff.
But I do appreciate the Jesus H. Christ joke.
Oh, right.
Where he says, Jesus H. Christ, and the car's like, Jesus didn't have an H in his middle name.
Yeah, I don't have that on file. So he, as you said, he hides the car, and then he kind of just like wanders through the woods, and he finds a bunch of mutilated lamb corpses.
I wouldn't say that's very generous, good sir. Like, I literally think they just took like some mats that were red and threw them on these sheep, because you could see them breathing. So these are real, honest to God sheep that somebody hopefully trained to lay down. Or sedated, I don't know.
Yeah. But he eventually makes it into a little village and goes into a pub and, you know, asks for... which seems weird that the first thing he's like, I need some food. And it's like, you're not, like, curious about where you are, what's going on. Like, right. You're not trying to solve your situation. You just want dinner.
Also, it's really cool that 19th century Switzerland, they could just speak English, all of them.
Right, yeah. And as soon as he requests food, he realizes, I don't have any money that's going to work in this place. He opens his wallet. It's full of credit cards. Right. And so he pulls off a gold ring.
He kind of knows something's going on, though.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't think cash or credit card's going to cut it here.
Yeah. So, yeah, he pulls off a ring and is like, what can you give me for this? And the bartender's like, I'll give you 50 gold francs or something. Yeah, I think it's...
Right. This felt like a D&D negotiation moment, right?
Yeah.
What yeah, cause, for this?
Yeah, he's like, what about 50 gold francs and dinner? And the guy's like, all right, deal. That's fine.
Right. Specifically trout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We make a point. But immediately, our good friend Joe here sits down right across from a guy. Guess who that guy's going to be? It's Frank Julia. I mean, Raul Julia.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, you know, he's a very, like, kind of fancy gentleman, you know, he's a, right. Like,
can
Joe
I sit
asked,
here?
Yeah, and Joe's like, oh, I can't stop you, you can sit where, and, it, like, he's like, where are your clothes from, or, this outfit is strange, and he's like, oh, I'm from America, this is how we dress in America.
It seems to almost work. He's like, all right, I'll buy that, sure, whatever.
Yeah, and then Joe's watch beeps, and that...
Oh. Hold on. Right before this, immediately before this moment, Victor Frankenstein, says, I scorn distraction. Immediately, watch beeps. I'm distracted by that. What is that thing that you have? Does it have mercury on it? How did you get to work?
Yeah, he wants to see this timepiece and is very excited about it and to learn that it is run on electricity.
But it's so small.
Yeah. And at that point, the pub owner comes by and gives Joe his food and offers sympathy to Victor for his brother who just recently died.
Right, and hope they kill the lady who did it.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, Victor gets up and, you know, they sort of introduce, you know, he's like, oh, I'm a doctor as well. My name is, you know, Victor Frankenstein. And Joe's like, wait, Victor Frankenstein? And he's like, yeah, I'm familiar with your work.
Hold on here. Like, this dude is bad at context clues because his brother just died and they haven't hung Justine yet. He wouldn't be known.
Right, like, yeah.
Barely by the end of the movie or end of the book would he be known.
Yeah, Joe is not a good time traveler. Like,
he's the worst.
He makes so many
of the grandfather paradoxes.
Yeah, like, he is not following the prime directive at all.
Can I spoil something? Because
yeah.
It is wild. Like, all right, if this happens in the story, the author definitely made Joe a self-insert character, because I don't want to spoil too much for you, but Joe bangs Mary Shelley.
Yes, he does. Yep.
What the fuck?
He does that. That happens.
I feel like at the end of this story, and everybody clapped, you know? it's almost that level.
Yeah. Yep. You're not wrong. Yeah. And of course, him telling Victor that he's familiar with his work takes Victor, you know, Victor's like, no, you must be mistaken. My work is quite unknown. Nobody's familiar with my work.
He's like, it better fucking be unknown.
Yeah. So Victor heads outside, gets in the carriage, and leaves, and Joe kind of sort of sneakily follows after him, curious as to what's going on in Victor's life.
Yep. And Frank just like tells his driver to pull over and let me out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And at 1720, we see the monster for the first time.
Yeah, and we don't get a good look at him at first. No. Like Victor is arguing with him, and like Joe is like overhearing this.
Well, like a kid, he's like, "Give me what I want."
Yeah, Joe's listening in, and then all of a sudden, there's like a rock slide, and
I feel like he knocked himself out.
He's
so dumb.
He like slides down a hill, gets hit in the head with a rock, and is knocked out. And then we get the first of I think three or four really short surreal dreams that are just completely pointless.
Right. Like, what do they tell us? What do they do? What happened?
I could not tell you anything about any of them. There's just a bunch of quick.
I call
flash.
This the trippy hell dream.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of people. It's like Dante's Inferno, where everyone's in the buried in the pits.
Yeah.
Like almost up to their necks, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like I go on about this a lot, but I hate dream sequences, and these are the exact kind that I hate the most. Like, they're just so useless to this story.
The only time a dream sequence is good is if it's a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yes.
Because that's half the movie.
Yeah, yeah. That is where it matters. Like, where it's part of the story, it has a reason to be there. This is the opposite of that.
But Joe wakes up to some wild dogs just chewing on him like he's a chew toy.
Yeah. And he fights them off and then walks back to his car. And he starts talking to his car.
He's for a casual ride.
Yeah, and he's like, okay, I think this is a time slip. We got to figure out how to get back. I have an idea.
How to reverse it.
Yeah, he says he wants to use lasers, right?
That's the whole thing that got him into this mess, right? Mm-hmm. Also, did he take the fucking laser home? Because otherwise, it's mounted to his car like he's a fucking member of the Mask team from the 80s, the 80s cartoon where everyone drove around in their cool trucks and shit. Yeah.
But so he has to have the car do some calculations to see how to get out of this, and the car says it's going to take 96 hours, which it's
that's 4 days, right?
This is such a thing for the 90s to be like, we have lasers that can create time slips, we have talking cars, but computers will take 96 hours to do some calculations.
The literal job it's created for, computation. It's going to take forever.
Yeah. But so he's like, okay, go ahead and run it. We'll just stick around until you figure it out, I guess. And so in the meantime,
he's going to hide his car randomly in the woods,
because
that'll work, I guess. But it does. Nothing happens to the car.
Yeah. And now he goes into Geneva proper. So he was in like a little village on the outskirts of Geneva. Now he's like in the main town, and just kind of like wanders around. This feels like production value stuff. Like, they must have had a good old-timey set.
Right.
So he just, like, we just see him walk for a while. We just see people in old-timey costume. But eventually, he gets to, like, a courthouse, and he goes inside, and it's the murder trial of Justine Moritz.
Yep. Well, he follows Frank and Elizabeth into it.
Yes.
Yeah. After he gets his brand-new clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and by the way, immediately he clocks on to this really pretty girl, aka Bridget Fonda. I almost said Jane Fonda. And he's like, "Hey, who's that hot piece of butt right there?"
Yeah,
basically.
Strangely, this movie abbreviates some strange things. So yeah, it's like just some guy in the viewing area or whatever that he's talking to, and asks who the girl is, and he says, "She's Lord Byron's mistress."
Byron's mistress. Wait a second. That was her sister. That would matter if they didn't just cut that character entirely out of this whole story.
Yeah, this version, Mary Shelley is in like a triad with Percy and Byron. She is both of their partners, and Claire does not exist.
Right. So in the world where Claire doesn't exist, Frankenstein does.
Right.
Good to know.
But he's, you know, it's not just in this time slip that that's the case. Joe seems to know that. Like, he knows, oh, this is Mary Shelley then, if she's Byron's mistress. So he goes down to, or he says something about, oh, this is Mary Shelley. And the guy's like, you mean Mary Godwin? She's not married to Percy either. And he's like, okay, well,
so
I'm
once again fucking up.
Yeah. So Joe is immediately like, you know, decides he's going to go down and talk to her.
Then we get this farmer who saw the monster, and he has a box. He dug up a footprint of the monster, which, I mean, good for you, man. I think plaster is a thing at this time, but the fact that you went all out, I appreciate the work. But is the advocate fucking with him, or the solicitor, whatever you'd call
it? It seems like it.
Yeah, because he tells him to just lean it over a little bit further, and then the dirt comes rushing to all one side, ruins it.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's just mocking this guy. Like he's saying that, you know, a bunch of my sheep were mutilated, and maybe the thing that did that could have hurt the little boy too. Maybe it's not Justine. But everybody else in the courtroom has decided Justine is responsible, so they're just kind of mocking this guy.
Well, he even presents the proof. Hey, it put a knot on my head, right? What else could have done this? And then, of course, he gets heckled by someone screaming out, yeah, that was the booze!
Right, yeah. Yeah, so they're all just laughing at him and everything. And meanwhile, Joe is talking to Mary, and he's like, hey, you know, this is a good idea for a book, right? And she's like, what? Yeah. And he's like, you know, you're a writer. I'm an admirer of your work. And she's like,
She hasn't written a damn thing, like maybe two pages.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, an echo of him talking to Victor. She's like, you must be mistaken. I've not been published yet. Just not doing a great job being a future person here. And we also find out in this version of the story, Justine's not just accused of murder, she's accused of witchcraft. I don't know why. They don't really do anything with it. There's no real point for that to be an added layer to this story.
Murder's fine. We could just go with that. You know why? I guarantee you it's because Roger Corman thought, oh, those people from the 1800s were stupid and backwards and believed in witchcraft. Dude, they don't at this point, actually. That's right. Kind of one of the big things about that time is they don't.
Yeah, we have moved past that as a society. And in fact, so they say she's accused of witchcraft, and then the jury foreman stands up and says that she's been found guilty of murder, but doesn't say anything about the witchcraft. And we never get any more after that about it. He's just like,
that's when somebody probably told Roger, hey man, that's kind of dumb. Let's just go with murder.
Yeah. So she's been sentenced to hang by the neck until dead. The court clears out. And we cut outside where Elizabeth has gotten in a carriage and is like begging Victor to come with her and not go wherever he's got some other thing he's trying to do. And he's like, I have to go. So she leaves in her carriage, and Victor starts walking through the streets out into the forest. And again,
oh, this is so good. because here, this is very poetic as well, because Victor is looking for the monster while Joe is looking for Frank. And the monster grabs Joe by the face. So it's this Ouroboros of goofiness.
Yeah, and the monster in this, now we get like a really good look at him. And it is one of the goofier like character designs we have seen of a Frankenstein monster. He's just
Did you
got
ever
like...
watch the Double Dragon movie? There's a character named Abobo in that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just...
pretty much looks the same.
He's all like pointy cheekbones and like ridgy forehead. Like he does have like long hair, which, you know, I guess fits more of like the traditional description or whatever. But it's just
like bright red.
Yeah. And it's just like a normal sized guy's head that they have put a big head makeup on. Like it's like the fat suit equivalent of a head, sort of. And so he's just got this little face in the middle.
Like, his shoulders and, like, everything up is nothing but muscle. Like, this guy has muscle going up the back of his head.
Yeah. It's a really strange choice. But, of course, you know, he grabs Joe, like you said, by the face and just lifts him up and is like, who are you? Where did you come from?
Right. Give me what I want, Victor. I'll kill this guy. And Victor's kind of like, who the fuck is that guy? I don't know him.
Yeah. So Victor pulls out a pistol and he shoots a tree nearby. It causes a branch to fall, which makes the monster drop Joe. And then they're just back to the monster and Victor are sort of like arguing without the bargaining chip anymore. And Victor's like, I'm not going to help you. You murdered my brother. And he's like, murdered?
Right. Like, it's like he did it, but he doesn't understand.
Yeah. And he's like, you ended his life. And he's like, yeah, well, he was easily crushed. You should have made him strong like me. And it sounds like a Klingon or a Krogan or something. Like, he's just talking about, like, everything should be strong and powerful like I am. And, you know, it's his fault that I crushed him so easily.
Right, but also he thinks that Victor basically made everybody, right, to a degree. He kind of gives Victor the credit of being God for this world. Mm-hmm. And to him, I guess that makes sense. To him, he is God, right?
Yeah, it becomes like an ongoing thing where he's constantly asking people who made them, and he's very confused about the whole, you know, the way that creation works, you know, in the world.
So if you're a big AC/DC fan, there's a song for you.
At that point, like, the monster, you know, he starts tearing up and he's like, you know, I didn't ask to be made monstrous. This was you. You know, make me a mate or else I will kill yours. Which I thought was interesting. Like, I feel like one of the big things in most Frankenstein adaptations is he says, I will be with you on your wedding night.
On your wedding night.
To make it vague that, you know, I might kill you. I might kill Elizabeth, but here he's just
whoever's there, really.
Yeah, he's specifically like, I'm gonna murder Elizabeth. So there's no question there. Victor can't be confused and, you know, plan poorly. He knows it's specifically the monster's gonna go after Elizabeth,
right? And clearly whoever wrote this, like, actually wrote this, they knew the story because they follow the beats more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess everybody kind of knows the story, but it feels like they were keeping really close, especially with the death of Justine.
That's
coming up.
Yeah.
So they clearly decided, we're not going to say to be with you on your wedding night.
I wonder if this is a case where the novel follows things pretty closely, and so they just kind of coincidentally followed some things close, but then they were like, let's hammer this home that he's going to kill Elizabeth and make it a little more obvious or something.
Or hear me out here. This is the mid early 90s, right? So what if they thought he was implying gayness?
I'll be with
you on your wedding night.
Yeah, that could be. But let's not make it confusing. Let's just make the threat explicit, so there's no doubt. Yeah. Nobody's unsure about what's going on there.
Let's remove all subtlety, because clearly the monster's talking about banging him and not killing his girlfriend or him.
Right. Yeah. So at that point, the monster takes off, and now Joe and Victor are talking. And Joe's like, you need to tell the world of this discovery. Tell them about your creation. That will save Justine.
Right. And then Victor's like, that's not what I'm going to do. I will not be doing that. Thank you.
Yeah. Joe's like, but then you're making her pay for your sins. And he's like, I am a scientist. I cannot sin.
Right.
And, like, you know, Raul Julia, right, like, in his gravitas. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, what the fuck is this guy talking about sins for? Like, I feel like Joe has some weird religious throwbacks. Like, I feel like his character shouldn't.
Yeah.
He surprises me with a lot of the religious stuff he says.
There's a lot of weird religion in here that seems out of place, even to the point that, like, I think Mary says some stuff about, like, believing in God, and we know she does not. Like, that's...
Right. Well, you're an your creation's an abomination against God. Why would she say that?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes no sense.
Real Mary Shelley would be like, that's some sick shit, bro. Let's go with it.
Yeah. they kind of talk about that. And, like, you know, I think Joe finally convinces him and he's like, okay, I'll write something out. So he, like, writes a confession And the whole time he's like, this pen is amazing. He's using Joe's pen.
It's a self-contained barrel.
Yeah. And then like he licks the envelope and he's like, oh, it tastes like peppermint. So he's just very excited about
it. Only Raul Julia could have pulled that shit off.
Yeah.
Only.
Yeah, he does. I mean, like, if you think of, you know, I mean, I guess probably the two roles most people know him for, or at least people around our age, is Adam's Family, as you said, and as Bison in the Street Fighter movies. And I feel like that really kind of shows his range of, like, his ability to be, like, weird and silly, but also very serious, but in a way that you don't take too serious at the same time. He's perfect for this role here.
It's the perfect balance of silly and serious.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just right.
Yes. You know, they talk about the technology that they, he's like, what world did you come from that you have these things? And Joe's like, I come from the same world you do. And he's like, ah, yes, the world of science, as opposed to Earth is what Joe meant. But
right. Well, I mean, and also he's like, he's kind of making fun of him to a degree. He's like, did you come from Olympus or the moon?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and Joe's like, ah, yeah, same world as you, the world of science.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It is funny, like, Victor seems simultaneously, like, very fascinated by the stuff that Joe has, and clearly Joe is, like, more technologically advanced, but he's also just mocking Joe relentlessly. Like, he belittles him as he is also impressed by... I think he's, like, impressed by his stuff, but thinks he's not worthy of the stuff.
I mean, that's fair, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, that's a good Victor, you know?
Yeah.
Being that self-absorbed, thinking he's above everyone else.
Yeah. So we cut from their conversation to a group of kids watching like a fireworks display, and the monster comes like storming in and just like starts attacking kids and like picking them up and demanding that they tell him who made them. And they're all like obviously freaked out by this weird monster.
Then we get a poor bastard who's decides to just whistle at the monster instead of hit him with something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like an old timey cop who like, he doesn't have a gun. He just has a police whistle. But the monster hates the whistle a lot.
And he fucking does a Mortal Kombat finisher, rips his heart out and shows it to him.
Yeah. Yep. the monster, I guess, says ACAB.
We stand the monster.
Right. And then we go to Joe, who has arrived at Villa Frankenstein with Victor's letter that he's supposed to be delivering to Elizabeth. At first, like, the butler doesn't want to let him in, but he's like, no, Victor told me I got to give this directly to Elizabeth. So he, you know, finally gets to her. She opens the letter, and she's very disappointed at what she reads. But she's like, I thank you for bringing it. And he's like, all right, you ready to go to the court? And she's like,
what? What do you mean?
Yeah, and he's like, you know, because of the letter, Justine, you know, the confession. And she's like, this is a letter. Victor said I should flee Geneva because stuff's bad and he wants me to get to safety.
Right, and Joe's like, oh, that motherfucker. let's go to the, What did he expect, though?
Right, I don't know how, like, as soon as Victor was sitting down to write this, I was like, he's going to bullshit this. This is not going to be a real letter. And Joe falls for it, hook, line, and sinker.
Right. If I know anything about A. Frankenstein, it's that they're going to absolutely bullshit whatever letter they're writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be for your benefit.
Yeah.
But I do... Liz is kind of a stone-cold bitch to herself, because the moment he's like, well, we're still going to the court, she's like, hey, Werner, the butler, I'm going to need you to get in the way of this guy.
Yeah.
So she's calling her butler to kick Joe's ass.
Mm-hmm. And so Joe goes outside, or you know, kind of gets ejected or whatever, and goes back to his car, and he gets in to drive to Villa Diodati to check in on the real side of this story.
He asks his car to print out the Wikipedia article for Mary Shelley.
And then has her print out the whole book. She prints the entirety of Frankenstein in like 10 seconds, just like this big stack of papers just falls out and it's the whole novel.
By the way, where's the paper tray for the car?
it's like where the airbag should be on the passenger side.
Right.
It's not safe.
No, not at all. Not unless you get a bunch of paper just shot in your face when you get in a car wreck.
Right.
Which, that's probably a fetish, but anyway. But yeah, he's going to see Lord Byron.
Yeah, and so he, again, you know, like, kind of parks his car in the woods and starts, like, wandering on foot, and he bumps into Byron, who has a pistol and is threatening to shoot him.
Now, he says a stone-cold line. It's fucking really good. Because Joe's like, hey, you're not going to shoot me, right? And he's like, well, it is a tourist hunting season, and I've already bagged three today. So, fuck yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's like, you know, I don't like trespassers on my property. Why are you here? What's going on? And eventually,
well, I don't specifically like British trespassers.
Yes. Eventually, Joe pulls out these like weird little binocular things, and Byron is curious about that, and that kind of breaks the ice. So Byron, he just gives them to him. He's like, you can have them. It's fine. And Byron immediately uses them to spy on Mary, who is just, like, in a rowboat writing her novel?
Yes, which is, that's interesting.
Yeah, and, yeah, Byron's disappointed that she's not up to anything, you know.
Yeah, not being scandalous.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, and he says that because, that she's writing, and it's such a waste of female intelligence to be writing. And Joe's like, well, I need to talk to her. It's really important. And Byron's like, all right, well, we're going to have dinner soon. You can come to dinner and talk to her there.
Right. But he's also, he wants to stir up some shit because he's like, ah, you want to be a suitor? Okay. Let's hook you up and see what Percy says about that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they head back to the house and, you know, Mary's still out on the lake, but Percy's inside. So Byron introduces Percy and Joe, and basically Joe just witnesses Percy and Byron doing their whole witty banter kind of thing.
But then Joe gets really, or not Joe, sorry, Percy gets really serious about a cloud.
Yeah, there's, you know, something ominous off in the distance that he's curious about.
It's like a gateway to another world. Was this a real poem that he wrote?
There seems like there's a lot of instances, you know, versions of this where we see Percy concerned about some sort of cloud thing. So it feels like there must be. I'm not specifically familiar with it, but yeah, I think there must be something there that these are all getting based on.
Yeah, let us know if you all do. If you all know yourself.
Yeah. So around then, Mary arrives, and you know, Joe is like begging her for help. He's like, we got to get to Justine. We've got to help save her. And she's like, how can I help her? And he's like, you know, because of the monster. And she's like, what? And he's like, what? You know, yeah, the truth, right? You wrote about this. You know. And she's like, no, I don't.
Shit.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I got a chapter now. Yeah. I'm getting there.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's like, oh, no, this isn't good. Justine is out of luck at this point. So, in fact, we cut right from that to Justine being led to the gallows as, like, a mob of people is, like, jeering and throwing stuff at her.
Boy, and Joe's going to keep making good decisions. Keep going.
Yeah, he just, like, swings in like an Old West hero and tries to, like, save her.
He tries to become action doctor, Peter Cushing.
Yeah. And, you know, he's, like, going to cut her free, and he's, like, she's fine. She's safe. I'm nothing's going to happen to her. And he's like, run, go away. And she's like, no, where am I going to go? Like,
I'm cool, bro.
Yeah. So
I made my peace with God.
Yeah. So she ends up just getting hanged anyway. And then Joe gets picked up by the angry mob and thrown into Lake Geneva.
Where, you know, he's lucky that he hasn't been murdered like 7 times already. We're about halfway through the movie, I think.
Yeah. Just so many bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, while he's in the lake, he has another dumb dream sequence.
This is even more stupid. Like, and it'll lead to even a more stupid dream at the end, though, right?
Yeah.
Because in this, what is it? There's like a laser cutting into his leg, and like an evil version of him's like, we're going to make you better.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
Yep.
And when he wakes up, he's being cared for by Mary, who helped him out of the lake, rescued him from drowning. And so to reward her for saving him, he's like, hey, want to see something cool? Let me show this actual historic figure my future car. This is going to be good.
Right. That'll get me in bed with her.
Right. And, yep, she's impressed by this horseless carriage that can talk. And they drive into town and just drive through town in this car. And villagers are all like,
right. That's weird.
What the fuck is that? And she's like, you keep talking about my work. I don't have any, like, what's your deal? And he's like, yeah, I'm from the future. I mean, if the car didn't give it away, like, and she's like, and I wrote a book. And he's like, yeah, it's great. Here, I'll show it to you. And he
hands gonna inspire a podcast. It'll be great.
So he hands her her own book, which is like so breaking all the rules of time travel.
Like at that point, don't you think she would change it just so she's like not derivative of her own work?
Yeah. And I mean, right away she picks it up and she's like, wait, this is Mary Shelley. And he's like, yeah, you're going to marry Percy eventually. And she's like, okay, like you're already giving her like information that she shouldn't have.
Right. Well, luckily he does back out of one thing because she's like, hey, are me and Percy going to die young? He's like, do you want to know that really, though?
Yeah, and she's like, yeah, you're right. So they get out, and he like points up at the cloud thing that Percy was talking about, and he's like, ah, so that's where I came from. That tear in the sky, that's my fault. Right. I fell through it. And he's like, I guess I should, I should realize I'm like Victor. I wanted to create something good, but I've made something dangerous in the process. And she's like, what do you mean, Victor? So it's true? Victor Frankenstein created a monster? And he's like, yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier. Right? You know, and she's
that's totally what your book's about. Get on the page. Come on. But this is when she says that he's an abomination in the eyes of God.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of scoffs at that. And she's like, wait, you don't believe in God?
You don't either,
like I don't know why they just, I mean, they were just like old-timey people all believed in God clearly. But right after that, so she's not the atheist we know her to be, but she still is super into the whole free love thing.
This is a great line from her, I will say that.
Yes,
because she says, Percy and Byron preach free love, I practice it. Bam.
Yeah, hell of a pickup line, and it works.
Hell of a pickup line. Yep. Listen, a lady comes up to me and says that I'm sold. Yeah. Except I'm married, so don't do that.
So we cut right from that to them like laying together like post-coitally.
Right, having a casual pillow talk about space and time. Just a little,
And Mary is convinced that all of this happened because Joe has been sent back in time by fate or God or whatever to stop Victor.
Still really weird coming from her.
Yeah.
From her character.
No, yeah, it's so weird. Then I think we get like a scene of Elizabeth saying that she needs to get back to Victor. She's going to travel to catch up with him.
She's like, Werner, help me get in the carriage.
Yeah. But then we see that Joe is already with Victor. And he's like, we need to work together. We need to kill the monster.
Right, but Victor's like, nah, I'm not gonna kill him. I'm gonna make him a mate.
Yeah.
That way he won't mess with Liz.
Yeah, that's the solution. Is do what he wants, and then that'll fix everything.
Yeah, propagate the species.
Yeah,
it'll be good. No.
And then we see in the forest, Elizabeth, in the carriage, and we see the monster just running behind the carriage.
You're being very generous calling that a run. That's like a skip hopping. And
yeah.
I don't know how he catches up.
Yeah. It's the Michael Myers thing. He just somehow is there all of a sudden.
It's like he's moving, it's like Michael Myers is in a hurry.
Right.
Just a slight hurry. Not too much of a hurry. Just a slight one.
Yeah. And he does catch up and he pulls Elizabeth out of the carriage and she's like, who are you? And he's like, Victor made me. And she's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. She's like,
right.
But he wouldn't want you to hurt me. And he's like, yeah, I know. And then he kills her.
Right. Rips her chest open.
Yeah. So he didn't give Victor much time to fulfill his side of the bargain.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the boys, Victor and Joe, arrive at this time.
Yeah, they find the body and, they're like, oh, no, this is bad. humans are clearly no match for this this monster.
Right. Our creator, Victor, this is Victor saying that, our creator didn't make us very well. You know, we got poor eyesight, poor limbs. I kind of improved upon the design.
Right.
Yeah, that's Victor. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly the angry mob appears, and Victor just kind of vanishes into the shadows.
He fucks off and leaves Joe holding the bag here, man.
Yeah, so they're convinced that Joe killed Elizabeth, and they just beat the shit out of him and are about to just string him up there in the woods. Yeah. But before they can do that, the monster shows up, and he just, like, wrecks house. He's just, like, throwing people around.
This is where the budget
was spent. Yeah, yeah. Like, this fight, I mean, it's a good fight scene. Like, he's just throwing dudes around, just, like, he rips somebody in half.
You're being generous again, man, because this is a massacre scene. There's no fighting.
Yeah.
He rips one guy's arm off, beats another, like, knocks another guy's head off with that arm.
Yeah.
Like, he rips out somebody's tongue. Mm. Like, it's just him. He's just rending people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brutal. And the whole time, Victor is just hiding in the shadows, watching this happen. And then as soon as the monster has killed all of the townspeople, he's, like, kind of coming towards Joe. And Victor pops out, and he's like, be careful, don't hurt him, he might be able to help us, actually.
Right. This is number three.
Yep, the monster, like, knocks him out or something, and, yeah, Joe has another dumb dream.
The dumbest and shortest of them all. Because, what, it's Percy, Byron, and Mary just approach him, and he's sitting there smiling like a fucking idiot. And then she's just like, you're an abomination in the eyes of God.
Ah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So when he wakes up...
At least we're done with that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when he wakes up, the monster is leaning over him, and he's like, are you alive?
He's like, I think so.
Yeah. And so Victor's like, all right, I got a plan to help create the monster, his bride. Which is crazy that he's, like, still wanting to make the bride, even though, you know, the monster's already killed Elizabeth. I guess he's just trying to save himself at this point.
No, you know, he's in it for the love of the game. Like, yeah. He loves this shit. This is his thing.
Yeah. But Victor's idea is we're going to do the whole setup, but instead of trying to use lightning this time, we're just going to hook up to your car battery. It's more powerful.
He literally says, I read your user manual for your car.
Right.
And I figured it out how it works.
Like, any of that would make any sense to Victor Frankenstein.
Right. Like, I feel like he would get some broad strokes. But also, what the fuck is this guy putting in his user manual other than, hey, turn this button on, off, this is how you reset the clock?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Right. Yeah, like, there's nothing about, like, internal combustion in, like, our car manuals. Right. It doesn't say how oil and gas make a car work. It's just, like, put gas in this hole. That's all you need to know.
Right. Make sure it's this one specific type of gas because we have a deal with the people who produce it, you know.
Right, yeah. And so while Victor goes to prepare his stuff, Joe talks to the car, and the car says the
right in front of the monster, though. Like, mm-hmm. The monster's not even fucking there.
Yeah. And the monster's listening in, and the car's like, yeah, the calculations are complete. We can't reverse the time skip. It's not going to work.
If we do it, the whole reality will become unbound, mm-hmm. or time and space will become unbound.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean? It's like, yeah. Unbound, bro. It falls yeah. apart.
Yeah, and he's like, but what if we use the laser? And she's like, yeah, it might send you through time and space again, but it's not going to send you back. It's going to send you elsewhere again. Who knows where?
Right. Yeah, it could be anywhere. And I love how at this moment the monster's like, is this a man?
is this car a man?
Or a man? No, sweetheart, it's not. Don't worry.
Yeah, and he's like, well, so... Who made the car? And he's like, yeah, I did. And he's like, well, who made you? And he's like, I don't know, God, maybe? God,
right, another religious thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's an easier answer. It's called mom and dad. Mm-hmm. If you're not religious, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
When a mommy and daddy love each other very much.
Right? Somebody needs to give Joe the talk.
Yeah.
But this is a good bit, though, because the monster's because Joe says God maybe, and the monster says, "Who is God maybe?"
Yeah.
I'd be like, I love you, big sweet monster.
Yeah. And so Joe's like, can you lift, there's like these heavy, you know, like big thick cables, can you connect these? And the monster's like, is carrying them out to where Victor is.
But it actually seems like now, for one, Joe has a plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, whereas Victor has always had the plan, now Joe finally does.
Yeah, he's using what Victor thinks is happening as a way to do his own plan. So, we end up, there's like, he's going to cause like a laser implosion, I think is what he calls it, and, you know, cause another time skip.
Right. So we get to see Elizabeth in her monster form.
Mm-hmm. Which is just like a mask covering the top half of her face.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're going to, you know, bring her back. Electricity is going into her and everything. She starts kind of like gasping.
Can we talk about Joe and Victor's exchange here as well? Because Joe comes in and he's like, Victor, the pain and guilt have driven you mad. Victor just looks at him. And the Raul Julia, the best Raul Julia look, and goes, oh, really? I can live with pain and guilt. You know, I just got to get Elizabeth back. That's all.
Yeah. But yeah, and at that point, that's, you know, Elizabeth wakes. She sits up. But then something else is happening. Like the power is being drained away. And Victor's like, what's happening? And
problem is they only threw one switch at that time. Then they move on to two.
Yeah.
And then he's like, fuck it, throw them all.
Yeah. But eventually Joe, like, you know, points out at the sky where the rip is spreading, and Joe's like, meet my monster. And we get like,
well, they do that after she gets the power surge, and Victor goes, she lives, because, you know, we gotta have it's alive moment.
Yeah.
But that is also a cool line. Meet my monster. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Then there's like a flash, and there's like all this, like, you know, galaxy kind of stuff happening on screen, and suddenly Joe wakes up and like in the villa, but it's now like all wrecked and decrepit, and it's like an Arctic wasteland.
And Victor's of course like, what the hell, what did you do, Joe?
Yeah, he keeps saying, put it back the way it was, or I will kill you.
And Joe's just like, fuck you, I can't do that.
Yeah. So obviously we're now back at where we were at the beginning, but it's not just Joe. He's there with Victor.
And the monster and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, the Victor is about to shoot Joe when the bride and the monster come out. And
when she wakes up, she seems like she's kind of into the monster.
Yeah, like it goes
a little nervous.
Yeah, it goes back and forth. Like it's similar to like the Bride of Frankenstein, where it's like she's not sure how to deal with, you know, this monster is kind of scary. Then she sees herself, sees her reflection, and realizes, oh, we are a match. Like we go together. But she, you know, it's the mirror scene. She's not okay with the way she looks. She's very shaken up about that. Victor is like, Elizabeth, come to me. Don't go with him.
And she sees him and she smiles. Like, she's like, oh yeah, you're Victor. All right, I gotcha.
And she starts walking towards him, and Victor holds his pistol up like he's going to shoot the monster. As Elizabeth gets close, she grabs the pistol and pulls it to her chest, and it goes off, and she dies.
Oh no.
Yeah. Which, of course,
we didn't see that coming a mile away.
Right, yeah. And of course,
but then the fucking monster banes him.
Mm-hmm.
Lifts him up and just snaps him.
Yeah, just breaks Victor in half. Like, he's just, you know, go like berserker mode. He just tosses him down, storms off into the, you know, Arctic wasteland. Joe goes over to Victor as he's dying, and, you know, we have to get some like classic last words.
Right. Victor's just like, kill him. Kill the monster.
Yeah.
For me.
So we're kind of like, by the end of this, Joe is kind of Walton, you know, like, he's like a future Walton. Like, they're lost on this sea of like time instead of space or whatever. But yeah, he's kind of being enlisted to continue Victor's mission here, as Walton is. Joe seems to accept that as like his new lot in life. He like suits up in like cold weather gear and heads out into the tundra. We get another like voiceover like we had with him at the beginning, where he's like, you know, I'm not really sure what happened to civilization. There's these remnants that I find, so I must be in the future, but I don't know what happened between my time and now.
Right, and this is the future that I may have caused.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, then he finds a bunker and just decides, fuck it, I'm going down in there.
Yeah. And thankfully, the bunker also has a talking computer.
Okay, this is bullshit. Like, dude, the bunker knows him?
Right. Like,
it literally responds, calls him Dr. Buchanan.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Yeah, and how the fuck does he realize, hey, if I clap my hands in certain ways, it does things for me?
The hand clapping thing is so goofy.
Where did that come from, though? Yeah. He does it, like, maybe he does it one time in the beginning with the laser, but I don't think so, right?
I don't remember him clapping at the beginning.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, he's wandering around this bunker, the monster jumps out and, like, is going to attack him, but then the monster's like, this world that you have created is better than Victor's. It's barren as I am barren. It is lonely as I am lonely.
Yeah. So he's kind of like, hey, thanks, man. But not really.
Yeah.
And then Joe just shoots the monster.
Yeah.
Just straight up shoots him.
And at first it's like he falls down, but then he gets up and like starts like coming towards Joe like he's going to attack.
Well, you know, this is third act monster jump. One more jump, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But tell me something, Anthony. Why the fuck does the monster have stitches on its eye? Like, that doesn't work, right?
Right.
Am I crazy?
It's the movie poster is that too, and it looks really cool as a movie poster, but it makes no fucking sense. Eye is like four different eyeballs that they have sewn together of different colors. He's like, got a part of his iris is blue, part's green, part's red. There's no way that you could sew four eyeballs together to make one eyeball. It just would not work.
And that it'd still function? Right.
Yeah, it's just like, this looks cool as hell. Let's do it. Like, right.
I'm cool with that, but just leave it on the poster. You know what I mean?
But as the monster is like coming towards Joe to fight him, he's like, what am I that everyone must destroy me? And Joe also says, you're an abomination before God.
And I am Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I thought that
was an interesting line that like Joe is acknowledging, like, I'm carrying on this terrible thing that Frank, you know, that it's obviously an indictment of like science in our present day by telling the story of a bad future scientist and a bad past scientist, that all scientists are bad. They're all corrupt and seeking their discoveries above and beyond any sort of like well-being of the human race or Earth or whatever.
Right. Kind of the beginnings, or not beginnings, but the start to the culmination of anti-intellectualism.
Yeah. So they kind of continue their kind of cat and mouse chase through the lab, the monster smashing shit.
Joe shoots the monster in the arm, and the monster has a very measured response of ripping its own fucking arm off and chasing Joe with it. I keep wanting to call him Victor
now that he's called himself Frankenstein.
Right.
Then, as you said, eventually the monster gets to a spot like in the center of the room, and Joe starts clapping. And
this kind of ruined the movie for me, honestly.
He's using
he's a fucking conductor of a symphony of destruction.
Yeah, I was just like, it's like the clapper, like the old, like, as seen on TV thing, that futuristic technology. Every time he claps, a different laser shoots, and just eventually the monster gets blasted with, like, I don't know, seven or eight lasers and gets exploded.
Right. And, of course, the monster does say one ominous thing, you cannot destroy me.
Yeah. And then...
Which he does, kind of. He does, effectively. So.
Yeah, he just gets vaporized like the Statue of Liberty did at the beginning. But then Joe wanders out back into the tundra, and then he hears...
Don't say he wanders out. The bunker literally leads him out. Let's make this as stupid as it is. The bunker points him out and, like, blows the lid off for him so he can get out to the outside world.
Yeah.
Dumb.
As he's, like, walking around on the ice, he hears a voice just from the ether. You think you have killed me, but I will live on forever, for I am unbound.
I am unbound. Oh, no, the monster... Like, what? What does that mean? Like, I get it, you're like in time and space, but like, are you all of time and space now? What has happened? Monster, tell me.
I feel like this may be a line pulled from the book, and I bet in the book it made more sense as like, this is a metaphor for the fact that Frankenstein, you know, the story of Frankenstein and the Frankenstein monster does live on forever. You know, he dies at the end of every movie, but he just keeps living on because he is sort of unbound from time. He's just, you know, a modern legend, you know, that's just going to be around forever. But in the context of this, it just seemed silly, like, especially after the clapper laser thing. Like, it just was like, what?
All right. Oh, also, there's a big cold space city. That Joe's walking to.
Yeah, and then we just go to credits. That's it.
Yeah. Well, does Joe live? Who knows? Does he die? Could be either one.
Yeah, and are there any other humans left, or is he just by himself in like a frozen wasteland being tortured by the voice of the monster? It's not a very satisfying ending, I will say.
No. It's goofy as shit is what it is. Like, for the movie being pretty good, more or less, for the whole thing, even though we've shit on it the whole way. But it's like, this end just dropped it. Like, it...
Yeah, it's... It's a Roger Corman movie. It's silly and fun, as they all are, but there is something about it that just doesn't quite land.
If you have this on at a party or something, that's fine. No one's listening or watching it anyway. It's just a cute little thing you can just look at every once in a while and be like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I think this was like one of... Was this the last... Yeah, this is the last movie he directed. You know, mostly Corman is, you know, known as a producer.
Especially.
Yeah, and like he directed, you know, a little bit like through the 70s and like right into like 1980, I think, and then this was like 10 years later, and then he never directed again. So it's a weird one to go out on for sure, after like taking a big break and then coming back and doing this odd thing and then just stopping again.
But listen, his executive production brought us things like Blood Fist 2050 and Piranaconda Dino Shark. Yeah. Dino Croc versus Super Gator. I mean, come on.
Yeah, jeez. I appreciate that he's still working. Like, good for him. But yeah, I mean, the prime of his time, of his like career, is definitely long past at this point. But yeah, I mean, he definitely made a huge impact on movies in general, between all the movies that he made or was involved in the making of, and all of the people whose careers he jump started. Like, Hollywood would not be the same without him, so, you know, we definitely appreciate his contributions.
Absolutely. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, without him we don't have Titanic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because James Cameron.
Yeah, or the Terminator movies, or, I mean, he discovered, like, Jack Nicholson, you know, I mean, Little Shop of Horrors was him, you know, like, I mean, there's so many things that we have that are fantastic that Roger Corman was such a big part of.
But then we also have this stuff, so I mean, you know, take the good with the bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely leaps and bounds above those kind of like sci-fi Sharktopus kind of movies that he's has his name on these days. You know, it ends a little silly, but like overall it has some interesting stuff to say about like the nature of like creation and, you know, what science's like obligation is to mankind and everything. It feels like it has some ideas, but it doesn't really know how to fully spell out those ideas, you know. It's just kind of like is this anything, does this mean, you know, just you kind of have to do a little bit of the work to figure out maybe what they're trying to say there. But, you know, at least it's trying something.
It is trying, for sure. I mean, you know, it's not the worst movie by any means, but, you know, just know that there's, if you're a fan of Mary Shelley and Frankenstein, there's a couple what the fuck moments.
Yeah, the anachronisms are, they come like fast and heavy in this movie. They're all over the place.
Doubt. And like we said, Joe likes to, he doesn't do the spoiler alert. He just does the spoilers.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony. So, We have a lot of talk this week about, you know, a man who wants to be a god and his monsters. So how about next week we talk about gods and monsters with Ian McKellen?
Yeah, I'm really excited to get to this one. you know, it's definitely a different angle of a Frankenstein story. I mean, this is, you know, mostly like a you know, it's a biopic about James Whale.
Right. And it's very appropriate that Ian McKellen plays James Whale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So this is going to be a fun one. You know, we've done a lot of stuff about Mary Shelley and her creation of the story, but this movie's pretty unique in that we get to see, you know, some of the stuff behind the scenes of the making of the films. Absolutely. So, yeah, yeah, it should be fun to dig into that story.
Yes, indeed. All right, where can they find us, Anthony?
Yeah, so you can find us on all the socials at The Frankencast. You can email us at thefrankencast@gmail.com. We're also over on YouTube, and you can also find us at patreon.com/thefrankencast. You know, we're always doing new, interesting stuff. We're having a lot of fun over there, and we'd love to have you.
Absolutely. All right, well, anything else we got?
I think that's it.
All right, then. To be continued!
Looks like you survived another episode. The Frankencast is a production of FCR Media. It's hosted by Anthony Bowman and Eric Velasquez. Follow us on Twitter at The Frankencast, or send us a letter at thefrankencast@gmail.com. Our cover art is by Amanda Keller. You can find her at Keller Illustrations on Instagram. Our theme music is by Vivek Abhishek. Thanks for listening.